This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Okay, Brooke.
Excellent. Thanks for coming on and thanks for having me tonight. It's a privilege, actually. I've been working with guide dogs over the years and working with Nicole more recently over the last year has been really, really interesting work for me. So it's a fairly small group, I think, of who's called in, so I'm quite happy for you to ask questions as we go along rather than try and remember what the question was at this time of night and ask it in a little bit of time. So feel free to interrupt as you need to. What I thought I would just give you a general background in animal physiotherapy or physiotherapy in general. I'm sure some of you have had some contact with physiotherapists as humans. Have all of you seen physios before? Is there anyone who's not sure of what a human physiotherapist does?
I know quite a few. It's a profession that a lot of blind people do go into, so I know about three blind physiotherapists.
Yeah, we actually had a couple in our course when I went through University of Queensland, and certainly travelling through Asia and working with massage therapists, I've always found blind massage therapists overseas even are extremely adept and probably a lot more so than sighted people. I think they pick up massage really, really well, and it's something I think Nicole's had a lot of enjoyment working with her dog as well in therapy. So what I thought is just go through a basic background of the profession of animal physio, because it's pretty new in Australia and internationally, so it might not be something that you're familiar with. Just have a look at different sort of conditions that we treat, and I guess then make it specific to guide dogs. And what I really wanted to go through was giving you a little bit of an idea of how you can work with your own dog, particularly in prevention of injuries, what sort of exercise is appropriate, and just daily maintenance, so that it's a nice bonding time for you to work with your dog and it allows you to pick up any issues that might come forward. Has anyone got any questions with that so far? Are you happy with the general concept tonight?
Yeah, no, that sounds fantastic.
Excellent.
Sorry, I heard one more chime. Did someone else?
Somebody's joined us?
Jamie Kelly.
Jamie, how are you, mate?
Pretty good.
Hi, Jamie. Where are you from, Hello. Jamie?
Melbourne.
I might just do a quick run around if I know where the couple come in. Okay, we've got Jamie in Melbourne. We've got Belinda in Victoria. We've got Nicole in Queensland. We've got Mark in Queensland. Brooke, of course, our speaker is in Queensland. We have Valerie also in Queensland. South Australia. Marilyn in Queensland. I'm Greg in WA, and I've got with me Erica Webb.
Hello.
Hello, Erica.
Mm-hmm. Welcome. We just need Northern Territory, I think. Oh, and ACT.
Yeah. Northern and New South Wales.
New South Wales.
Tasmania.
Yeah, that's true. okay, so animal physio is an emerging... Oh, we got someone else there?
Hello.
Hi, it's Joyce Jones from Toowoomba.
Welcome along, Joyce.
I had a lot of trouble dialing in, but anyway, I made it.
Sorry about that. We're just getting going, Joyce, and we'll let Brooke keep on going. We've interrupted her a couple of times already, so we'll let her get a roll on, and if we get a chance later on, we'll let you know who's around. Thank you.
I'll listen to the physiotherapist.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry, Joyce. So I just was giving a basic background of what I thought I'd go through tonight. Feel free to ask questions as we go along. That's absolutely fine. So I'm a human physiotherapist. I went through University of Queensland, which for those of you in Queensland, it was actually the only uni that did the training at the time. Now there's lots and lots of different courses out there. I graduated in 1997 and then worked in private practice. I did do some neurophysio, some hospital physio, and travelled overseas quite a lot with that. I've done a lot of Pilates training, which I find I bring across to the animal species into dogalates, I guess, if you want to call it. But gradually became aware of the profession of animal physio when I was working over in UK, and it was established over there initially. So it's quite prevalent in the equine industry, as some of you may be aware, with racehorses. But a lot of people don't think of companion animals and small animals needing the same sort of therapy. So I came back to Australia and started a master's program, which is run through UQ as well, and finished that in 2005. So that was a two-year postgraduate master's of animal physio. So the requirements were that you're a physio first, had that training, and then we learned the skills to apply across mainly to horses and to dogs. So it was absolutely a brilliant path for me to go on, and not one that I necessarily would have thought when I first became a physio, because it didn't even exist back then. So it's been a really interesting career for me, I guess, over the last 15 years. I've always had a passion and affinity for animals, and I think growing up I thought at some stage I'd always work with animals. But I used to pass out when I took my cat to the vet, so I thought that I probably wouldn't be able to cope with working with them full time. But I've since found out that's not so bad. So I now work full time with animals. I've gradually transitioned across from two-legged species to four-legged, and I haven't really looked back since I've done that. So I guess the joy for me is it's not so much that I'm just treating the animal, which is extremely rewarding, but it's very much a partnership of working with the owner of the animal, and that's even before I start going into that bond that you're all well aware of with guide dogs, you know, where you have such an affinity and close connection with the animal that you work with. So I need to really work alongside the owners and teach them what to do at home, and I think that's really important in the care and the management. So it's a teamwork. We work very closely with vets in Queensland. We have to have veterinary referral as well, so it's a matter of really working together as a team to make sure that there's the best outcome for the animal, and obviously anyone else in the industry that's involved, it's important to bring everyone else in. So particularly with guide dogs, with Nicole, we've worked quite a lot with the trainers there, which I'll go through down the track. But obviously anyone else who's involved with that animal is really important. So the conditions that we treat are really the same as in human medicine, which is very well established now in Australia. It's been around since the early 50s, I guess. So most people would be aware of what they see physios before. Probably the most, the ones that are most obvious are the ones that are in the news, which would be more sports and private practice with rehabilitation of injuries. And that's just one small part of physio. Actually, the Australian Physio Association, there's many, many subgroups, and the animal physio is one small subgroup that we've developed now of a special interest group. But we do work in fields of in hospitals, in neurology, so rehabilitation after strokes and head injuries, for example, in cardiorespiratory, which a lot of people might not be aware of, so working with people with cystic fibrosis or simply clearing their chest after surgeries, pediatrics, and that's a very large area, trying to work on development in pediatrics. Right across to sports, hydrotherapy, you know, there's even sort of business areas there as well. So it's a very, very broad profession. And as an animal physio, I really take from all of those in terms of the cases that I see. So I work at North Coast Veterinary Specialists, which is on the Sunshine Coast. What I like is variety. I do tend to... probably my weakness is that I tend to get bored. So the beautiful thing with my work is I get thrown anything case-wise at these clinics, and size-wise from a small, I had a small cross toy poodle Pomeranian, which looked like a toy the other day, right up to a 75, 85 kilo Great Dane. And these conditions would be anything from developmental, which if you like, pediatric sort of issues through to post-surgical medical problems, neurological problems, and then obviously, you know, more orthopaedic, which is probably what we'll focus on tonight. So a very large area. For you guys with your dogs, I guess the main areas that become an issue or may become an issue in is specific to the breeds that we worked with. And we were discussing before that in the US they were using German Shepherds, which is interesting, as guide dogs. But primarily, as you're aware, the Labrador, Golden Retriever. And even working outside guide dogs, to be honest, this breed in Queensland, for some reason, would have to be, for want of a better expression, my bread and butter breed. In terms of conditions that I see a vast majority of Labradors and Golden Retrievers for whatever reason. I know my colleagues down in Victoria and probably don't see quite as many, and I don't know whether it's just the climate or, you know, that we like this sort of breed up in Queensland, but it's certainly a very prevalent breed right across. And they're just such fantastic family animals, and I think that's a big part of where the animal industry is going these days, that they are a part of the family, that their personality behaviour just fits in so beautifully. So working in with the owners, it's important to provide daily care and management for them. So a lot of my job is advice and support, and that's really ongoing. As a therapist, I've always wanted to be fairly holistic in my treatment. So I know as a human therapist, which I think sometimes isn't done very well in private practice these days due to time restraints or room restraints, but, you know, often treatments are cut down to 15-20 minutes in private practice, and I really think you need to look at the animal, whether they're on two legs or four legs as a whole. So in humans, from, you know, head to toe, and I guess nose to tail in a dog, you never have an ankle injury that hasn't got some sort of back pain because they've been compensating. And the big difference between two-legged and four-legged animals, obviously, with four-legged, they can compensate a lot more than what humans can do on two legs. So it's really important for me, I think, as a therapist, to really observe what they're doing movement-wise and have a look at how they compensate. So, you know, I may be referred just a knee, you know, it's had surgery, but unless I look further up through the body, you know, there'll be problems down the track. The other big difference, I guess, treating humans and animals is that if I keep it fairly broad, humans would tend to want to hide their injuries as much as an animal does. And in fact, humans get paid some sort of income for being on a pension or so, if, you know, we tend to like to get sympathy injury. The big difference with animals is it's survival for them. So they actually want to hide their injury. They sort of fight flight, and if they have predators around, they often will compensate and try and hide their problem. So this makes it great for me to treat because, A, they want to get better, and the key is to educate the owners to make sure that they do the right sort of things at home, because essentially the animal will get there whichever way they can. They'll get there on three legs, some come into the practice on two legs, handstand walking because their back legs aren't working. So that's quite a difference in treatment for me from going from humans to animals. And it's important to observe that and be aware of it in rehabilitation. So, for example, a lot of animals will just choose the pace that's most efficient for them, and that simply might mean that they choose to go into a trot, a little bit quicker gait, because it's a little bit easier, more efficient. They don't have to spend as long on each leg as opposed to a nice, slow, steady walk. So these are the sort of things to be aware of with your own animal when they start compensating, what things have changed. And even as I, you know, worked in with Nicole, it's, you know, the frustration I think that she's had, Nicole, and so correct me if I'm wrong, but not being able to see those changes earlier. And this is where it gets really important to be able to work in with your animal, to feel what's going on and pick up those subtle cues, and obviously use the sighted people in your community and family to be able to observe those subtle changes as well. So I'll go through a few tips on that down the track. So basically, it's, you know, a team approach is really important. We need to sort of work together to work out what the goals are. Obviously, with a guide dog, it's a working animal as well. So if someone comes in to me for their first consult, one of the questions would definitely be, what is your goal? You know, for what my goal is for that animal, it might be purely that I want it to be pain-free and I want it to be moving well. For some of the dogs, they just want them to be a couch potato and sit with them while they watch telly. For some people, it might be they want to get back to throwing a ball at the beach. Some of them are high-level agility dogs, obviously racing animals. And for guide dogs, you know, that's a bond that goes over a very long period of time that's far beyond, you know, I think any other connection in a lot of the cases that I see, which is great. So, you know, we need to get them back to specific duties, and obviously that's slightly different depending on you guys, you know, what your needs are as well day to day. So, for, you know, Nicole, do you mind me mentioning bits about your case, Nicole?
No, it's fine. A lot of these guys already know because being on the...
Yeah, that's right. I spoke to Nicole. I'm Joyce. I spoke to Nicole at the convention, and that's why I'm here tonight to hear some more.
Mm. Yeah, most of them know the ongoing joys we've been having, the ups and the downs anyway. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the things like when Nicole, for example, you know, would like to be able to get to and from university, you know, so a certain distance of walking. There's a certain pace. Nicole, I went for a walk with the, well, I was trying to stay behind her to do a visit to see how she worked with Nev in harness. And, you know, Nicole has an incredibly fast pace of walking, which I normally walk pretty fast, but I was working to keep up with Nicole. And that, you know, Nev was particularly suited to Nicole for that reason. So, you know, obviously some people with desk jobs or whatnot, you know, it's the same with humans. It's really important what we're aiming to get back to and what our ultimate goal is with you and with the dog and with guide dogs, and make sure that we, you know, reach those goals as best as possible. And at the end of the day, you know, I think everyone's aware that the ultimate outcome, you know, is to improve the quality of life of the animal, but, you know, of you guys as well. So, if the dog's unable to reach those goals, I know guide dogs are very, you know, closely keeping an eye on that to make sure that everyone's doing as well as they can. So that's sort of basically the difference, I guess, from humans to animals. In human physio, we really, as a general summary, look at anything assessment-wise to do with the musculoskeletal and neuromuscular system. So that's basically all your muscles, your bones, and all the nerves. So anything externally, structurally. We use lots and lots of different techniques. And basically when we come out with an undergraduate training, it's really like any course, I guess, it's the bread and butter. And what you do afterwards with postgraduate training or your influences with different people that you've worked in different areas will give you, you know, what you are as a physio. So, you know, I've seen many physios to treat me, many osteopaths, chiros, acupuncturists, and every single person I go to is very different. I'm sure you've all experienced that as well. So it's sort of finding that unique connection with that therapist as well is important. Personally, I've always been very manual. My thumbs will show that these days. So my hands are my tools. My eyes in just looking at movement is something I've been fascinated with, the background of acrobatics and gymnastics for me and Pilates. So I really enjoy that subtle, you know, just breaking down movement and trying to see where the issues are coming from. And then treatment's basically designed on an individual basis from there. As I've gone through as a therapist, I've started to blend more of Eastern and Western concepts. So physio is very much a Western concept. Throughout Asia, they don't even really have what they'd call a physiotherapist. They have sort of massage therapists or manual therapists, but through my training, I've looked much more at the Eastern concepts and training up in acupuncture as well. I find works really, really well for both species. perhaps more so, to be honest, with animals, because they don't have needle phobias like many of us do. That's been beaten into us from about, you know, 3 months of age with vaccination. So they tend to not have preconceived ideas. And the techniques I use are much more Japanese-style techniques, which are very superficial and very well tolerated by children, human children, animals, and those that are needle phobic as well. So I think a blending for me is something, you know, I'll always keep working on. As far as that team approach in the animal industry with this animal physio thing, it's a new profession. I guess it's sort of tiered in different ways, but like I said at the beginning, we work really closely with a veterinary surgeon. So they'll evaluate to obtain a diagnosis and basically prescribe a medical or surgical treatment. So by the time the dogs come to me, they've already seen your vet, whether it's a general practice vet or they've gone through to a specialist as well. And then through the diagnosis, they'll have a protocol or plan whether they need to go to surgery or they're managed with medicine, so pain relief, anti-inflammatories, rest, and that sort of advice. From there, you know, physiotherapy be recommended, just as really what we used to work in human industry back in the 70s, the GPs used to also refer to physio. So gradually over time, from 1978, we didn't work with a GP referral, and we became primary practitioners. But in the animal industry, we worked very closely with the vets for that. So the role of the physio really is to evaluate the physical function. So we get a physical rehabilitation plan. And then we work in with the vet nurses, obviously, that are very much involved in the overall care needs, and they create a nursing care plan. And then if you want to put a fourth tier on that, you know, we need to work in whichever industry, so with guide dogs, with the trainers, and whoever else is involved with that dog. So the benefits of physio really, to dumb it down a little bit, is to aid healing. So we use a lot of different techniques to try and promote circulation, promote healing, get things clearing up more quickly, to reduce pain. And that's probably one of the biggest things. I think a lot of people who have had experience with human physios, you're probably aware of that old school no pain, no gain, that, you know, sometimes if you have a deep treatment, it's not the most comfortable of things, but the end result still should be that you reduce pain. So you should feel better, ideally, from going to have treatment. Initially, granted, it, you know, first 24 hours or so, you might be a little bit more tender. But, you know, as that resolves, if you've had the right sort of treatment, you know, pain should resolve. So I certainly want, you know, I always say to the owners after treatment, you know, please let me know what they're like in the next 24 hours, 48 hours. As you get on with time, it's a numbers game, and you probably get better at knowing how much to treat. Certainly if you over-treat, then that animal's going to be sore, and that's something that, you know, is not ideal. So, in terms of when they go to physio, then physio really, as far as those really early stages, are very important. So I think some of the concepts are not to start physio because, you know, the general concept is that it's more about exercise, but it's really important to start in those early phases. So in the specialist centre, I start day one after surgeries, for spinal surgeries, for pelvic fractures, hit by cars, any of those really acute high care patients. I certainly start with them day one to try and work on that to aid their healing and reduce pain. The earlier you get an injury, the easier it is to treat. Obviously things can heal more quickly and you don't end up with secondary complications and problems down the track. So that's probably the biggest message I try and get out to the veterinary profession and whoever I'm working with. Much, much harder when I get cases that are a long way down the track. Even, you know, as Nicole's worked through as well, you know, it becomes really chronic. There's a lot of muscle wasting, a lot of secondary problems, and it's like an onion. You've really got to peel away a layer and peel away a layer. So some of the very old arthritic dogs, obviously, I'd, you know, much prefer to see them when their symptoms become first apparent. From there, what we do then is to try and restore function. So once we've got pain settling down and they're able to move a bit more easily, we try and improve range of motion in the joint, or, you know, generally get them moving better. get them back to function. Now, function may just be that they're sitting better. They're able to get up from sitting more easily. You know, and these are the sort of things that a lot of owners will come to me and say, you know, I ask them what the issues are, and you know, it'll be things like, well, he's just not able to jump in the back of the car. He's not getting up on the couch as well as he was. You know, if I ask him to sit, he's a bit slow to sit. You know, he's not able to walk as far as he used to. So these are the key things that I want to try and work on. From there, we try and improve stability, which is basically the fine control of your muscles around your joints, which is where I guess Pilates or Dogolades comes in, if you like. So the fine muscles help support those joints. And we know when you have an injury that it switches off these muscles. So these are sort of deep muscles inside. Essentially, it's your posture, how you're sitting and how you're standing. And a dog, like I said before, will compensate really easily. And just knowing how it sits and stands, you'll get a bit of an idea of how it's offloading. And then we try and improve overall muscle strength. So building that bulk, so getting back to exercises, whether it's walking up a hill or swimming or doing a bit more strength training once they're over that initial phase. And really the goal is to improve quality of life, and that's really the most important thing. As I said before, different animals, you know, we can treat, I guess, humans, we put it at the top of the list. Horses is a really big area. And dogs there as well, but I've worked in Australia Zoo. I used to treat Steve, actually, so through that amazing process, I've managed to treat some wildlife, some elephants, some cheetahs, you know, koalas, all those sort of things. So really you can apply your skills across to any sort of animal. And it's just a matter of thinking laterally and learning the anatomy and the biomechanics and then applying it across from there. So I guess the overall conditions that we treat in the small animal industry are a lot of pre-surgical or post-surgical cases. So sometimes if the dog's going to be booked in for surgery, say for a common injury would be cruciate ligament injury, sometimes it's good to do some physio first to give them an idea of what to expect at home. Some of them may be overweight, so get the weight off them so they recover better, start to reduce pain, reduce inflammation, and build up a bit of muscle so that when they have the surgery, whether it's a few weeks later or a few months later, they're ready to hit the ground running, in inverted commas. So pre-surgery can be a good area as well. Obviously, post-surgery, as I said, for different conditions, we'd recommend certain times to start treatment. Really, any orthopaedic or any neurological condition, it can be covered. Degenerative disease, so arthritis, any fractures, as I said, so any dogs that have been hit by cars, and just doing a little bit of research internationally, it can certainly be quite a common thing, even in guide dogs as well, fractures hit by cars or attacks from other dogs as well. So it may be an area hopefully none of you have to experience, but it's something that's been reported. Any soft tissue injuries, tendon injuries, as we mentioned with Nicole's dog, Nevi. So, you know, these things can hang around for a very, very long time and get very chronic and quite debilitating. Any gait abnormalities, so obviously more at higher level. It may not be that the dog's completely lame, so it's holding the leg off the ground, it's unable to walk. Just those subtle movement problems is what I was mentioning before. And respiratory disorders, so if they've got any problems with breathing and certainly after surgeries. So when I go about treating an animal, initially, as I said, I'd go through what we call a subjective assessment. So basically you're really talking to the owner, and I've had a bit of a history from the vet as well, but what the diagnosis was, what things aggravate it, and this is where it's good to sort of make a bit of a list for yourself as well. You know, is it at the beginning of the walk that you can feel that they're not moving very well? Is it I can walk half an hour, but if I go 3/4 an hour, I'm having problems? You know, it's after a bit of a run around, or, you know, it's having trouble getting up and down stairs. What sort of things make it worse, and what sort of things make it better? Is it rest? Have you tried heat packs? Is it anti-inflammatories or medication? Have there been any investigations that have been done, so any x-rays or scans, any past medical history? and social history. So this is really important when I'm working with people like yourself. What's the living environment like? What's their job? What do they need to do day to day, and what are your goals with that? For a lot, it's nutrition as well, what's going in their mouth, including supplements, but what their diet is, and any previous treatments they've had and what outcomes they've had from that. So once you've got a bit of a subjective history, we do an objective examination. This comes from observation. So, you know, from when a dog's sitting in the weight room to when it comes through to the clinic, I'm just generally looking at what its demeanour is, you know, how is it, does it look depressed? Does it look in pain? Is it moving well? What sort of posture does it choose? Can it stand in the weight room, or has it got to lie down? Some dogs just can't even settle or lie down. So what's its behaviour automatically before I even put my hands on and have a look? Any conformation problems? So, for example, in a Labrador, if it comes in as a puppy and it's got both its front legs turned out, walking a bit like a duck, if you like, that may be normal in a small, white, fluffy sort of breed, but in a Labrador, I'd be starting to have concerns that there may be something issue-wise to do with its elbows or its shoulders. So how it's standing is really important. And just its overall muscle bulk, you know, is there any wasting on one side compared to the other or any imbalances? We go through a gait assessment and it really depends on what's practical in the clinic, but, you know, how are they walking? Maybe at a different pace if we need to, or like I did with Nicole the other day, I said go for a walk. Unfortunately, it was hot, wasn't it? But, you know, go for a walk for 20 minutes, half an hour, because Nev was okay. It's sort of towards the end when they fatigue that you start to see some problems. I use an underwater treadmill, which some of you may or may not be familiar with, but it's basically a... it's used a lot overseas as well, but it's a treadmill that's in a large plastic, well, I guess it's plastic, but you can see through it all the way around, and it fills up with water. They've used this in horses since the 70s as well. So I can get the dog on the same spot and choose the right, you know, pace that I want to, and over that period of time I can video it as well, but really have a look at their movement front on, side on, back on. So I find the tool of the underwater treadmill much more easy to look at gait properly. I'd have to say, you know, vast majority of owners don't walk their dogs well on the lead, and that's one easy tick the box that I can do with you guys because they're very well trained and very consistent in what they do. With the gait analysis, though, in working with guide dogs, the really interesting thing for me is that the dog being in harness is very different to the dog out of harness. And I guess if you sort of think of a horse and rider as a unit, how the rider sits on the horse and how the saddle sits on the horse will make a difference to the horse. And it's a chicken or egg sort of cycle. So if the rider has a problem with their back and their pelvis and they're not sitting evenly, for example, the weight that goes through that saddle will flow onto the horse. If the horse has issues, it'll come back through to the rider. Obviously, you're not sitting on your dog, but just purely the positioning, which can be really, really subtle, of the length of the handle and where you're positioned in relation to the dog and the pace that you choose. That, to be honest, I think probably with the subtle lamenesses or problems can make a big difference, and that's something we need to work really closely with the trainers to check that, you know, whether it needs adjusting or if it, everything's set up the way it should be for the comfort of the animal, but also for you guys. And if it's some front end problems like we've had with Nev with his shoulder, then that's made a big difference even recently, going back and addressing that with Nicole, hasn't it, in terms of your positioning, how long, you know, the handle is, and whether it was blocking Nev's shoulder movement, being able to reach forward. So that's really something to look closely at and consider, because that's quite a unique connection that's there all the time. Yeah, and certainly.
Well, we subtly adjusted the body piece on the harness itself. The trainers loosened it off a little bit, and that's really helped his range of motion in his shoulder.
Just such a tiny adjustment when he's in it for a length of time. You know, it all adds up. And, you know, that may not become an issue. It's not necessarily cause and effect. But when we're trying to rehabilitate him, it's just that tiny little change seems to have freed him up really nicely, which is great. Well, then, once you looked at their movement, you know, we'll go through different functional tests. So, you know, some people say to me, look, he's always had trouble sitting, or really, you know, he's been fine, but all of a sudden he's balking at being able to sit. So it's important to look at those sort of movements, and they're the sort of things that you'll feel as well when you're working with your own dog. We look at overall range of motion of all the joints, what the tissues feel like, and there's some simple things that you can be taught of how to, you know, check that each side is the same. And fortunately, they've got two of everything, so, you know, you can always compare to the other side, hopefully. I haven't seen any amputee guide dogs, but if you've got another leg to compare to, you can just simply, you know, have a feel of how does, you know, say if it's the back leg, how does the heel bend up towards the bottom? Just knowing what's normal is important with your dog, and obviously different breeds are different, but you're pretty much working with the same breed, so it's worthwhile if you know other people just to get familiar with, you know, whoa, hang on, this side doesn't bend up as much as the other side. Why is that? And if it's something you can clear, whether it's each night or a couple of times a week, and just get used to a couple of quick tests, if you like, but which might also then be therapy for the dog of stretching them out a little bit and knowing what's normal for them. That then, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years down the track, as you've been working with them, if they are going towards the later stages, you might suddenly notice, oh, they're really pulling back and they're not, you know, not as free with that normally. And that might be the best way to start to pick up some issues, which is, you know, prevention is obviously heaps easier than the cure. So if you can pick up those subtle changes in your own hands with your dog, then that's really important. And that's something that can be taught very, very easily. So knowing what normal range is through your dog from, you know, whether it's the neck. If it's a neck that you're looking at, just some simple things of getting food at night time or a treat. And just if you stand behind and support under the belly, if you take a treat in front of its nose and see if it can bring the nose right around towards the bottom. So it should be able to go fully sideways, nose to bum. Obviously, they need to do some self-care that, fortunately, as humans, we don't need to do. But, you know, they should be able to get down to that area pretty well. So nose to bum, nose to knee, and nose to hock or ankle, they should be able to go right down both sides. So you can just feel what they're doing as you do that. They should be able to look all the way up, and they should be able to look all the way down, so go between their legs. So that's one way to have a look side to side of how the neck's going. And with the front legs, you may or may not be aware, but if any of you have done yoga, there's two stretches with yoga that we've pretty much built yoga from observing animals in the wild. But dogs, when they naturally get up, they'll do what we call a downward dog stretch. Is everyone familiar with that?
Yep. So
they basically stretch their front legs forward and drop their chest to the ground. And then often they'll do an upward dog stretch, which is their back legs. So they'll lengthen their back legs behind them and stretch up. So it's called a downward dog and an upward dog stretch. And the beautiful thing with animals is they've worked out in two stretches how to stretch their whole body. And if all of us did that as a human, we'd be a lot better to start our day just by doing one downward dog and one upward dog stretch, and off we go and sit at our computer and at our car and get on our iPhones and do all the horrible things we do to our body. So the funny thing is that you can do it with your dog as well, because it is a play bow for a dog also.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get down on your knees, and feel free to do it in the privacy of your own home, but if you stretch your front arms forward and drop your chest to the ground in a downward dog stretch, often your dog will join in with you as well, which is quite a bit of fun. So if animals start to have injuries, so if they've got a problem in their front end, guaranteed they stop doing that movement, and that's something I always ask the owners. When they feel better, they do it again, okay? And one of those stretches is taking their front legs forward. So with a straight limb, you're taking the front leg forward up towards the nose, if that makes sense, which you can do lying on the side. And the same thing on the side with the back leg. With a straight leg, you can take the back leg straight behind them to stretch their hips out, if that makes sense. It's not easy without being able to show you in your hands of what's happening. But you know, there are a couple of simple stretches where you can get an idea of what's happening with the front leg and what's happening with the back leg. And then really from there is massage. And this is where, you know, as we mentioned with Greg before, you know, there's a lot of, you know, a couple of physios going through with me as a human physio. Without being sighted, I really find it's throughout Asia as well, a blind massage therapist is the best massage I've ever had. And the big thing that you can't teach people is to really work on the sensitivity of your hands. And physios often get in their head very much anatomically and rationalize things and intellectualize things. But what you're feeling with your hands is a gift and a talent. And I think you can learn that to a degree, but it's one of those sensitivities that you guys would always already be a lot further ahead. So by learning some basic massage with your animal, A, it's a beautiful bonding time. They found it lowers your own blood pressure if you do massage on your dog, so it's very good for you. It's something that's, you know, nice to do, but it's also so much therapy for, you know, giving back to that animal that's giving you so much every day as well. So there's plenty of benefits to learning how to massage, and if it's something that's Nicole's picked up beautifully, and it's not a hard thing to teach as well. So I think in Queensland now, Cara I've worked with over the years, but I think she's starting to teach that as part of the courses, which is really good because it gives you an idea of feeling what you're feeling and to be able to assess for any issues, but also treat and keep them moving. And that's the key.
Sorry, Brooke, yep. Just to clarify for everybody who doesn't quite get that, what Brooke's meaning is that that's now part of the Guide Dogs Queensland training syllabus for residential classes. Cara actually goes in and runs a lecture to actually teach all the new handlers how to massage their dogs.
Oh,
that's
fantastic.
A massive tool, which I think is great, and I'd pass like to see every school in Australia do that. If they
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, I think it's a really good area to get into, and it's, you know, you can just teach some very safe techniques, and it's something you can get more and more into if you want to. But you know, it's a great area that certainly would be good to have at those early stages, so you can feel what's going on. So yeah, basic safe stretches and massage is something that's, you know, nice to work with for sure. So that's probably the main sort of areas, I think, with you guys in terms of working with your own animal is just, you know, I guess appreciating, well, I appreciate that it's such an incredible bond, which is above and beyond, you know, just the straight companion animal that we all have. I've got four dogs and they're certainly part of the scene. I couldn't imagine not having them. But for you, they're your eyes, they're your best friends, and they're complete independence for you, which is, you know, a whole nother level. And on average, I believe they work for you for about 8 to 10 years, if that's correct, yeah?
Yep.
So it's a pretty long time to be really subtly aware of what's going on with them. A lot of the conditions, I guess, that I've seen with guide dogs and aware of, whether we like it or not, there are some inherited conditions that do pop up with elbow dysplasia and hip dysplasia, and they can certainly be managed very well. Cruciate ligament injuries are the most common injury in a dog, bar none, and certainly very common in the breed of Labradors. They've got quite steep angles in their back legs, so we do see those at times, which is a ligament in the back knee. I've seen some tendo Achilles issues of unknown origin down the track, definitely back pain, arthritis, as we all get as we get older. Unfortunately, you know, some dogs are attacked by other dogs off lead, which you'd be well aware of, you know, and any hit by cars. So usually in Labradors in Queensland, a lot of these issues, particularly orthopaedic, are a problem because they're overweight. But it's not an issue with you guys so much, but that's certainly something I generally have to work with Labradors up here. But, you know, it's not that common, but it's certainly good to be aware of the different types of injuries, tendon problems, and obviously just if they've run and fallen in a hole, then they're going to have an injury as well. So just to finish up, I guess a couple of warning signs for you to look for. A lot of people say to me, how do I know that I'm in pain? And that's sighted people as well. Dogs can't speak to you. They can speak to you. It's not in English, but you know, I've treated people with head injuries that can't speak to me or for another foreign language or, you know, they've had a stroke or children. So you can still work out what's going on with them. Obviously, if you can work with a sighted member in your family or community to see any subtle changes that's aware of in their movement, of how they're getting up or those sort of things, what you can really do is fine-tune your ears. If you hear any scuffing of the nails, for example, in the concrete, one foot might just drag and scuff a little bit. Sometimes they finding that slightly slower gait a little bit more challenging, and they want to be increasing pace a little bit, or they've just changed their gait a bit. They're a bit slower to get up and to get down. And sometimes people think, you know, they get frustrated with their dog because they're not behaving themselves properly, but there may actually be a reason why all of a sudden that's changed, and that's something to be aware of. In harness, you'll definitely start to feel some changes. Difference in the quality of how they're moving. And then, you know, ideally with your hands, we can train you to start to feel with, you know, massage and stretches. So you'll start to feel difference in the tissues or how they're going to move. Changes in body language, obviously is really important, or like I said, refusing to follow commands. So just trying to pick up on those early signs before it really becomes quite significant and you've got to do a fair bit more. They might need to be out of work for longer time. Sometimes dogs also lick where they've got pain. So the sighted person in your family might see some, it goes pink colour where they've been licking from pain. Pins and needles, like us, if you've got a nerve problem, we're pretty sure dogs feel the same thing because they also gnaw or lick along the same line of their nerves. So there's some other things that you can look out for. But the key really to sum up is prevention. You know, it's in all your guys, I'm sure, will be on great diets. You know, there are lots of supplements out there, fish oils and glucosamine and things that you can work in with your vets as well. There's plenty of complementary therapies out there, including physios. If anything, just make sure that the people are properly trained and come highly recommended to you. And there's lots of alternative therapies if you're interested. So acupuncture is one that I work with. Many of you are probably aware of Bowen therapy, Reiki, homeopathy, naturopathy. There's plenty out there of different avenues in terms of, you know, keeping them moving. But I think the important thing is that we work together as a team for you guys and in with guide dogs as well. And that's, you know, whoever's working with you should all hope to be paid and be working towards the same goal. So really the idea, I think, is to keep the bond going and to keep the quality of life for as long as they can. So, you've got them for a long time and they stay comfortable and happy. How's that?
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you.
Welcome.
That's really great. Thank you.
I was just saying when you were talking about the downward dog, I got down on the lounge and did that, and, of course, the dog comes straight over and he did the same thing.
Did he? Oh, that's fantastic. That's excellent. It's amazing how much they mimic. And then, unfortunately, it usually ends up in a play session. So you want to just have a nice stretch, but you get all jumped all over.
That happened as well. Anybody got any questions for Brooke there?
Yeah, it's Mark here. I've got one question. Dog shoes or dog boots. I've sort of been instructed by my trainers to consider, because we actually walk during the day on hot roads and footpaths. I guess like humans, we've got to be careful what sort of shoes we've got to get for our dogs because that could affect, you know, their gait and so forth, which could also affect their physio aspect. So I guess what I'm after is what sort of things should I be looking for in selection of a
boots, yeah. I guess because it's something you're looking at long term, there's lots of different boots out there, so you need one that's going to last for you so you're not, you know, spending a fortune every couple of weeks or so. They certainly do wear through quite a few. Overseas, they use a lot of boots for sledding dogs, huskies, that sort of thing in the snow as well, and certainly dogs that are run on a lot of concrete. So, yeah, they provided boots for people. If as long as, you know, boots do change their gait a little bit. They tend to get used to them, but the first few minutes, I don't know if any of you are as cruel as I was a kid, but I used to put sticky tape on my cat's paws and they sort of lift it up and shake it around, and, you know, it just takes them a little bit to get used to. So just be aware of that as well if you are trying boots for the same time.
I find I have to put boots on my dog half an hour before we go out. Because before she'll start to walk normally, so she's got to walk around in the house with them on.
Yeah.
She usually lies down on the floor and cracks it for about 10 minutes.
And then, like any animal, unfortunately, you know, they do tend to eat them, chew them, you know, so just be aware of that in terms of costing for yourself. I wouldn't leave them on unsupervised, put them on when you go out. There's some brands, there's one called Square, RUFFWEAR is one that I've used. It's an American one, but we can get them out here, and they're the ones, the different sort of quality. You can get right down to fully grip Trex, high-tech soles that they use for, you know, the off-roading sledding and that sort of thing as well. So they last really well. They've got a Velcro wrap around and they stay on nicely. You just need to make sure that it's a snug fit, so sometimes little kiddie sock in between, and I'd just recommend just check that the hair between the toes is trimmed so that the pads have contact so they're not just slipping and sliding around. But yeah, you may only need two, like, you know, probably just even work on the two back feet initially. It just depends on what's happening, which is being worn down. But that's one of the difficult things I was working in with Nicole, because, you know, your dogs are trained to stay on the concrete. And it certainly is, you know, there's certain issues that come up with that because they're not getting a whole mixture of different surfaces. So by all means, who was that who came in with their own boots? Is there any other ones you found that work really well?
I'm about to purchase a new pair because I'm not happy with the ones I've got. So
yeah, a lot of them.
And I got them, I got them, what, 5 or 6 years ago now, so I couldn't even tell you what brand they were. So
yeah, I've never had a dog who's worn them. They just won't take them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've worked with quite a few, are fine. And it, you know, Labradors are much, tend to be, you know, tolerate things a lot better. So it's just a matter of desensitising them to it and making sure the fit's, you know, proper.
When I first got them for her, I put them on her every day before I fed her. And so she ate with them on. And so she'll always stand up to eat. And so therefore she was standing up in them. And so she wasn't going to refuse her food. She's a Labrador.
That's great. You want to just make it positive and do it in short sections. You know, some of them run with them, don't even worry about them. Other of them just, you know, take that little bit of time. So if there's anyone that you borrow some from, just to try first. But, yeah, the important thing is get a good fit and ones that are, A, going to last and be comfortable. Is ideal. So there's a few different. Feel free to email me. I don't mind if, Greg, you want to send my email out if anyone's got any questions with that sort of thing, then I can direct you to a few different suppliers or whatnot. But good question. It's certainly, some people, they definitely need to have boots for their dogs for sure if they're going on those sort of surfaces all the time. Has anyone
any
got
other
another
questions?
Question?
Any other questions?
I'd like to ask, because we're in a different state, how do we go about finding a physiotherapist for our dogs? Is it just a matter of going to the Yellow Pages and checking out, or is there a, you know, like a main telephone number that covers all
that? Well, I'm the chair of the Animal Physio Group with the Australian Physio Association, so I know every single person around Australia. So if that helps, I'm happy to be a resource. Once again, feel free to email me, and if you let me know where you are, and then I can let you know where
they are.
That's probably the easiest. We're a building profession, and unfortunately our master's stopped. The funding was cut, so we haven't had people come through. I've taught on a course recently, but so we are a bit few and far between until we get that up and running again, but We're certainly out there, so if I can help you out with that, I'd be more than happy.
That would be really cool.
My dog's currently working with a canine chiropractor. That's done. She's a veterinary chiropractor, so yeah. But she's done osteopathy. She does. She's doing massage. She's doing stretching. She's doing acupuncture. She's done Chinese herbs. She does everything. So, I'm in Geelong, and so I couldn't find a physio here. And yeah, I mean, if I needed to travel to Melbourne, yes, I discovered I could do that. But it was just easier, and I'm really happy with her at the moment. So, what I found is that they're spread more readily throughout Australia. So. If you can't get a physio, you might be able to find something else.
Yeah.
Just talk to your vets because they're a really good resource of who's out there and who they've worked with as well. So
are still opposed to them, so I've actually changed vet clinics as a result of that. So
another thing. We used to have a great chiropractor who was at for the dogs at the vets, but she's moved on, unfortunately, so I'm sort of trying to track down someone else.
Well, if I can help you at all,
thank
and I work
much.
Alongside other industries as well, so it's not just physio, but often word of mouth too is the way to go.
Any other questions for Bob Brooke there? I've just got one then, Brooke. In regard to, you were talking about preventative, therapies, and I'm thinking in particular, obviously Labradors, when they get older, wearing away of cartilage is something that can happen. Is there something we can do about that, or can a physio prevent that from happening as soon as it might, or is it something that just is going to happen anyway?
Yeah, look, arthritis isn't natural. We all get degenerative changes, don't we, as we get older, so it's part of dealing with gravity, I think. What we want to do is reduce impact. So other than guide dogs, certainly weight, like I said, with general Labrador populations, they're keeping the weight down. Keeping them strong and fit and getting on top of things as quickly as they can. So to reducing pain so that you're not getting a lot of that muscle wasting, and then getting the appropriate sort of exercise for them. So if guide dogs is happy and your dog's allowed to swim, then I think swimming is fantastic because it reduces that impact. So if they're allowed to have any swimming time, I think that's really good. And it's a matter of trying to find a balance, I think, with your exercise. Ideally, as I was saying before, different surfaces. So Nicole, for example, when she's, on a weekend and then it's got time off, then just trying to encourage him to get on a longer lead on some grass, and having some time where he's just a little bit freer out of the harness as well, getting him swimming. I use the underwater treadmill, walking through the water. So those sort of impacts environments take the impact out. And then getting treatment for pain relief, whether they're needing anti-inflammatories or acupuncture, I don't find has the, doesn't have the same side effects. So supplements as well. Different things out there and on the market these days, you can spend an absolute fortune. So I guess the most researched things that keep staying in the literature are the fish oils or omegas. Some seafood or fish oils even that you might take yourself are appropriate for the dog as well. And the vets or your therapist can advise you on that. Glucosamine, those sort of supplements that help with cartilage, chondroprotective agents, they call them. Vets even give injections these days. Cartrophin or Zydax is the other name for it, for arthritis as a course of treatments. Yeah.
Dog went through that, and in hindsight, it was nothing to do with the vet or anything like that, but we thought it was just arthritis. He was an old dog. He was 11, 12 years old. We were going through that, but in the end, we discovered that that he actually had cancer. He probably had both, but it was the cancer then.
So the key really is to get a proper diagnosis, so you know what you're dealing with. Have a look at the dog as a whole. And certainly, your massage and, I find known as the old arthritic dogs, they can make a big difference day to day with pain relief and certainly making them feel better. So it's always a combination of things for me, just looking at their health and nutrition and what they're doing. But a big concoction for arthritis is, a lot of, I even had the other day that just said, it's just arthritis, there's nothing we can do about it. There's heaps you can do for arthritis.
You learn as you know, a lot of people around this virtual table would say, you learn a lot from your first dog. With your first dog, you're fairly naive, but you learn a lot from that first dog, and you get your second dog, and you're onto things fairly quickly.
It's just numbers game with everything, isn't it? So, you know, so the more time you have with them and the more intuitive and the more you learn, and that's what life's about. So that's obviously a good thing.
But some things are just so subtle as well.
Yeah,
like for my dog, it was a slight reluctance to get on a bus and a slight reluctance to walk up and downstairs.
Okay.
And I was taking it as a behavioural issue. And, what we've discovered is that she's really strained her muscles, which we think is due to bus drivers refusing to lower the floor and her having to make massive jumps up onto the bus.
That's such an important point. Every single thing a dog does is purposeful. And the longer I work with them, the more I drop my ego. And you know, if anyone says to me, oh, the dog's just putting it on, there is always a reason for it.
No, that's it. But I thought it was I didn't have a bond with her anymore, and I was doing a whole range of sort of things. And, and then she finally collapsed on her hind legs in the park one night about a month ago. She's fine. She's absolutely fine now. She's now pissed off because she's still only allowed to work for about half an hour a day, and we used to walk for a couple of hours. So she thinks she's fine, but I've been asked to keep her off buses for another week, so we're doing that much to her disgust. So
good on you for picking up those subtle signs anyway, because, you know, a lot of people don't see things until they're a long way down the track. So
yeah, absolutely. No. And then the first vet I took her to said she had chronic arthritis and that she would be dead within a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, that doesn't make sense because she's still stretching. There's no stiffness. There's no this. There's no that. So, then meant, you know, getting a second opinion. So,
Okay.
Yeah, and just be intuitive with your animal. You know them better than anyone else does.
Oh, absolutely. No. And, it's like if I'm getting a diagnosis, well, I want proof of it. So,
Yeah, well done. Yeah, that's great. Well, it's worth it. They're with you for a time, and there's been so much training going into them. So.
Oh, absolutely. No.
Yeah.
Any final questions for Brooke there?
Well, it's Nicole. I was just going to say that when I take Nev for his walks on his extended leash, I do use my white cane or go sighted guide, just in case anybody had visions of me just happily wandering around with the dog. On the
Thank you.
I do protect myself. And with him, I give him one fish oil tablet a day because I think it was you, Brooke, I can't remember, but somebody said that, or maybe it was a specialist, I don't know, somebody said you give the dog roughly half of the human dose because basically he's roughly a little bit less than half my weight. So he gets one fish oil capsule a day. I give him one magnesium tablet a day too to keep his muscles relaxed, at least that's the theory, and I bury that in his food. Otherwise he wouldn't just take it. The fish oil he just eats like a lolly, but the other one he won't. And when I massage in winter, or if I think he's sore, I use some Rappi gel as well with him, which is like the tiger balm for dogs, which he really likes, except just make sure to be mindful that you've got Rappi gel on your hands then, so don't go rubbing your face or mouth, and don't decide to do a health check on the dog when you do that, and let's check puppy's eyes and but it is a good product.
It's the menthol, and it's readily used in the equine industry as well.
I picked that up for about $16 online for the tub.
Okay.
Heat packs and are really good as well. So if you've got wheat bags and heat packs at home, they can be really great for pain relief. So just make sure it's the right temperature, but heat's certainly really good for circulation and pain relief, so you can wrap them around the joint or on the muscle before you massage too. So, there's plenty of things that you can do. If anyone's got any questions, you're very welcome to email me if you think of things down the track.
But I could just put her on normal fish oil, because I've been told to put her on fish oil, and I'm like, well, how do I get one suitable for dogs? But what
you can get... You can get specific products out there.
I've gone onto websites about them, and there's about 5 million of them, and I'm like, how do I choose which one?
Well, I just use the Blackmores, just the Blackmores you buy, like, I don't know, like 200 capsules in the supermarket, and I take two a day.
Okay.
Two a day, give him
how
one
many a day.
Day
do you give?
I give my dog one a day. I take two a day.
It depends. I'd probably increase that if they've got injuries. So it depends on whether they've got injuries or not. So for humans, for 1,000 milligram capsules, if you've got arthritis, they actually recommend 4 to 6 to 8 a day.
Oh, for humans, okay.
For humans, yeah. So for dogs, for that typical Labrador size, you know, I'd even suggest 1,000 milligrams twice a day, and that's what the specialist I work with suggests as well. If they have too much, they just get, sometimes they get runny poos, or there might be sort of a bit of a mucus around it. But, you know, I'd give one morning, and you could, do that twice now, Nicole, as well.
Under ordinary circumstances, just one.
The reason I was giving him one is I forgot to add we inadvertently bought a double strength one. The capsule, it's a 2,000 milligram. So yes, he is
Megaderm is a very messy business, isn't it?
The which one?
Megaderm. It's the oil that the Guide Dog Queensland recommends and issues sometimes.
I missed out on that. I didn't get that.
Yeah, I got that one, and it's very messy. Is there anything in Megaderm that can be...
What do they want? Do you put that in her food?
Yeah, that's what we were told to do.
No, I put Sasha's blend in Nev's food, but a spoonful... No.
I'm using Joint Guard, so...
Oh, well, that's roughly the same.
Yeah, it is.
No,
Sasha's blend has apparently got a fishy flavour, a fishy smell and taste to it, and there's no way she would eat it, so...
Is Megaderm really an omega-3 oil?
I don't know.
You can get mixtures of everything that's got your green lip muscle and everything as well. So just check in with your vet so you're not doubling up on things. Otherwise, it just becomes expensive wee at the end of the day.
Get
the right dosage and, you know, just make sure it's fine. But, you certainly can, cost-wise, just so you're aware, you certainly can use your human products for those things, your glucosamine and your fish oil. So naturally, animal products have a bit more. So if it's a lifelong thing and, you need to keep costs down, have a chat to your vets, and I'm sure they'd be happy for you to use your human product that you're on it yourself. So that should be fine.
Okay. Any other questions there? We might just... Oh, I can hear one dog asleep in the background.
Yeah, I was hoping that was a dog, not a human. I haven't bought someone today.
Thank you very much, Brooke, for coming on. Extremely interesting. And Nicole for organising it. Thanks very much for the two of you.
Thanks, Nicole.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?